Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to our 30 Ideas for 30 Minutes. The first idea comes from Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria, one of the founders of the B'nai Akiva movement, one of the pioneers, one of the main students of Rav Kook, and a leader of the religious Zionist movement in Eretz Yisrael. And he has here a very, very beautiful idea. The Pasuk tells us, Vayivieh Yitzchak ha'ohala Sara imo, that Yitzchak brings his wife into the tent of his mother, Sarah. Rashi over there famously says that there are three things that happen. Shekolzman, Sheshara Kayemes, Hayaner Dalak Me'er Shabbos L'Erev Shabbos. That the whole time Sarah was alive, the candle in the house would stay lit from one Friday to the other. Ubracha Mitsuya Be'isa. And the dough, there would be a blessing found in the dough. Ve'anan Kashur Ala Oel. And there was a cloud that would hover over the tent. Umishamesa pasku, when Sarah dies, all three of these things stop. Uksheba Rivka chazru, but when Yitzchak brings Rivka into the tent, so all of these reappear. Now, pshat is, there's a beautiful imagery here, which is that Rivka is going to take over the legacy of Sarah, that up until now, Sarah was the standard bearer of Klal Yisrael, but now that's being passed on to Rivka, so all of the miracles that happened in the merit of Sarah are now going to happen in the merit of Rivka. Rav Neria here points out, what is the significance of these three things? Three miracles that happen. It can't be coincidental. It can't just be that, it happened that way. There has to be a deeper significance to why it is the three things. Why is it that the cloud hovered over? Why is it that the candle was lit from one Erev Shabbos to the other? And why is it that there was a bracha found in the dough? What is the significance of those three things? So he writes here that each one of those represents something significant in the volumes of what a Jewish home is built on. That when it comes to the values of a Jewish home, he writes, it's built on three foundational ideas. The first one is the Anan, the cloud that's hovering over the tent. What does a cloud represent? So we know by the Beis HaMikdash, or the Mishkan, the Pasuk tells us, Ki be'anan ere'e ala kapors, that Hashem appears in an Anan. So what's an Anan? Anan's a cloud. What does a cloud represent? Well, as opposed to a menorah, which represents clarity, if I'm in a dark room and I light a candle, that candle is going to now give me clarity. If I'm in that same room and then all of a sudden I fill it with this murkiness of a cloud, if I, incense or something like that, so what's it going to do to my visibility in the room? I'm no longer going to be able to see in the room. Now, interesting and parenthetically, we've discussed this in the past, there is a parallel between the menorah and the ketores. We discussed this, that they always come together in the Torah. Every time the Torah talks about the menorah, it also talks about the ketores. Why is it that those two come together? You can see a past three ideas in 30 minutes around, I think, Truma and Tetzava. We had discussed that. But what does it mean over here? That Hashem appears or that there was a cloud hovering over. So he writes here that the cloud, misamel es hanistar, it represents the hidden. Me'avar l'chaim haniglim, e'al l'chaim hamamashim. That there's a physical world, there's a material world, there's the world that you and I see. There's a table here, there's a chair there's a light there's a bookcase there's a safer here. Those are all physical things. I can feel them, I can touch them. But then, as a Jew, we believe that in addition to the physical world that we can see and touch and feel, there is a spiritual world that is hidden. Part of a Jew, or part of being a Jew, is the ability to see beyond the material, to see beyond the physical, and to be able to understand and appreciate that there is a depth to this world that we can't see or we can't understand. I have a chrusa in Nefesh HaChaim that I just started recently in the mornings. And one of the things that Rechaim Yevalezhin talks about over and over again is an awareness that our actions don't just impact the physical world, but that there are realms and realms of olamos, that there are worlds and worlds built one upon the other, and that the way we behave and the way we conduct and the way we act in this world directly impacts those worlds above, that there's a parallel, there's a correlation between our behavior in this world and how it impacts worlds that we can't see, touch, or feel. So says Rav Neria, that's what the Anan represents. The cloud represents a kedusha, a certain sense of a holiness, an ability to see beyond the physical and to appreciate and remember that there is a spiritual element to this world as well. So we don't just get caught up in the rat race of going to work and getting a job and earning money and having the house and having the car. But the anan over the tent is a reminder to us that there's also a spiritual element that we strive for, that we strive for Kedusha in our homes. That is what the cloud represented. The mysteriousness of the cloud represents the mysteriousness of Hashem, the hiddenness of Hashem, and yet we know that He's there. That is the cloud. What is the Ner Daluk? What is the fact that the candle was lit from one Friday to the other? So he writes, based on what we know to be true, Erev Pesach. Erev Pesach, where are we supposed to look for chametz? We're supposed to look for chametz where? Everywhere. And the Gemara goes out of its way to say, dafka in the every nook and cranny. What do we do to look for chametz in every nook and cranny? Do we take a blowtorch? Do we take a bonfire? No, that's not going to light up. That might light up the room, but it's not going to help me look in a little tiny corner of the room. So rather, what do I take to allow myself to look at every corner in the room? A little candle. A little candle. And the candle, the Gemara describes, the halacha is, the candle allows me to go to every crack, every nook and cranny in the house, and to be able to identify and to pinpoint things that are even small, and even might not be visible when I'm looking at the rule as a whole. Says Rav Neria, that is what the candle represents. Or gadol ha-meir einu maspik. It's not enough just to have a big candle that lights up the room. Tzarech ner katan shela oro roim gamas pratei advarim. You have to understand and appreciate that the details in Judaism are important. The same way a candle is going to highlight every single detail. So in Judaism, we don't just believe in the big stuff, but we believe that every single detail is important. Why is every single detail important? I'll give you an analogy. I'll give you some marital advice. I'll give you some relationship advice. If you tell someone that you love them once a year, on an anniversary, on a birthday, and you send them a card and you leave it on their pillowcase, that's recipe for disaster. We know that love is in the details. Love is when, you know, you notice the thing about the person. Oh, they got a new sheitel, they got a new necklace, they got a new dress, they're driving a new car. When you notice the details about someone and you're observant to those details, that is a symbol of your love, care, and affection for that person. So he writes, the same is true in our love and relationship with Hashem. Then when it comes to our relationship with Hashem, it's not just the big stuff. It's not just the anniversary. But it's our ability to understand and to appreciate that it's the details that showcase and manifest and represent our love for Hashem. So whereas the anan represents that striving of Kedusha, the candle represents an attention to detail. An understanding that the minutia of halacha is ultimately just as important as the quote-unquote big stuff in Judaism as well. And what about the blessing on the dough? What does the dough come along to teach us? So he writes, the dough is represented of parnasa. It represents our livelihood. And therefore, when there's a bracha in our livelihood, it means that we have an appreciation. We are somech bechalko. We are comfortable with what we have. And we're not constantly looking over our shoulders, jealous of everybody else. He says that represents the Isa. Imrak yesh Isa bimono. If you only were to fully appreciate the blessing of the bread and the dough that is in your house, yesh lechem abayis, someach bechalkohu, someach umuvarach, then you will truly be blessed. And so he writes that those three components are the three elements of building a vibrant Jewish home. That on the one hand, it's an awareness not just of the physical, but of the spiritual as well. Our homes are not just four walls. Our homes are not just a dining room table and a kitchen and a living room and a bedroom. Our homes, that is the physical construct of the homes. But we ultimately know that what builds the house is the Kedusha that we infuse in the house. That is represented by the Anan. Then you have the Ner Daluk, the candle, which reminds us that in Judaism, it's not just the big stuff. It's not just showing up on Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, showing up for Ne'ilah, right? That's your anniversary. That's sending God the anniversary card. It's important, but that can't be the totality of the relationship. The relationship is defined by the detail, and that's the candle. The candle allows us to get into every single little detail and to appreciate every single little component. That is what a Jewish home is built on as well. Yes, it's the making brachos, and it's the washing hands, and it's the mezuzah on the door. It's all of these little things which seemingly are mundane and trivial, and they kind of fall into the backdrop of our everyday life. But Rav Neria says, don't ever underestimate their power to infuse Kedusha into our homes. And lastly, the brach of the Isa, which is a reminder for us to be someach bechelko. We should be happy with what we have. Whatever it is, If you have bread in your house, you should be happy with what you have, not looking over your shoulders, not being jealous, not paying attention to what your neighbors are doing, because if you do that, as the Mishnah Perkei Avos tells us, Hakina ve'ataiva ve'akavod, motzien es adam min olam. I once saw a beautiful pshat on that. What does it mean, motzien es adam min olam? That if you're jealous and if you chase honor, and you, right, it's going to take you out of the world. What do you mean, take you out of the world? The answer is, you're never going to be alive. You're never going to truly live. You're going to always try to be living someone else's life. You're always going to be miserable. You're always going to be looking over your shoulder. You're always going to be saying, if only I had... You're never going to live your actual life. So it's motzien es adam min olam. It's as if it's removed you from the world because it's preventing you from actually being able to live. Says Rav Neria, those are the three building blocks of a Jewish home. That is idea number one. I think a beautiful idea. Idea number two comes from Rav Yechiel Michal Halevi Epstein, who's the author of the Aruch HaShulchan. This is not the Aruch HaShulchan. He has a Sefer Tosefes Bracha. And here he asks a question that I never thought about before. And I love questions that I never thought about before. Pasuk says, Vayetze Yitzchak Lasuach Basadeh Lefanos Erev. That Yitzchak goes out, Lefanos Erev, the Yitzchak goes out into the field, close to dark. And the Gemara says, Yitzchak Tikein Tfilas Mincha. That is the source of Tfilas Mincha. Now, how do we know that that's Tfilas Mincha? Because Lasuach has to mean something. Yitzchak didn't go out and talk to himself. He wasn't a schizophrenic. So what does it mean he went out into the field alone and talked? He must have been talking to somebody. So, it must be he was talking to Hashem. That's how Chazal understand that ein sicha ela tefila, that the context of Yitzchak over there is davening. Asks Rav Yechiel Michal Epstein, the Baal Aruch HaShulchan. He says, I understand why then we call it mincha. Right? The word mincha doesn't appear in the Torah in this context. We know that he davens. Why do we connect that with the word mincha? Now you'll tell me the answer is because of what? Because of the Korban mincha. Oh, so he says that works. There's only one problem. He says that there are two Korban minchas every day. There's the minchas ha'erev and there's the minchas ha'boker. So if the mincha can refer to afternoon and a Korban that was brought in the morning, why do we associate the word mincha with the afternoon? It's Gaval de Kasha, no? Anyone ever bothered by that question?
Also, no.
Where?
Right here. Leis Erev, it's not Erev. It's not the morning.
Why do we call it mincha, though? Call it, I'm sure we, you know, Tfilah Shel Tzaharayim, right? We could have called it anything else. Why specifically do we attribute the word mincha to that? Okay? That's the question. It's a Gaval de Kasha. I never thought of it before. He writes the following, and I think it's such an important mussar for everybody nowadays. Okay? He writes, we know that there is a special kedusha to mincha. How do we know there's a special kedusha to mincha? Chazal tell us that mincha was the time that Eliyahu Navi was answered with his throwdown with the false prophets of Baal, as described in Sefer Malachim, that the prophets of Baal are davening all day, and they're davening and davening and davening, and obviously no one's answering. Eliyahu gets up at mincha time, and essentially says the equivalent of rub-a-dub-dub, Hashem, can you throw down some fire and consume this korban? And all of a sudden that happens, and everyone's, whoa, how'd you do that so fast, Eliyahu? And it happens to be that the pasuk describes that as happening at mincha time. And so the tour and others come along and say that we see that out of the three minyanim during the day, shachris, mincha marav, mincha is the most auspicious. He writes here in the bottom of page number 2, Aval tefilas mincha shiba emsa yom. Be'etzem tirdas adam miparnasaso, tsarich adam lasimo so alibo liskor lefanos mikolos kavlis balosa. The Torah writes, why is it that mincha is the most auspicious? Why is it that Eliyahu was answered at mincha? Because mincha is the hardest feel of the day. Shachris, you wake up, you're fresh. It's easy to daven shachris. It's relatively easy to daven shachris. Okay, showing you get up in the morning, you know you got to do it before work, you do it. Mariv, Baruch Hashem, now at PRS, we have a 7, 8, 9, 10 o'clock Marivs. You have no excuse not to daven Mariv. Whenever Mirtz Hashem will have an 11, we'll have a 7:30 and an 8:30 and a 9:30. Okay, we're going to get there slowly, right? We're not yet, some of the places in Borough Park or Muncie, right? But we're going to get there, Mirtz Hashem. Okay, but we've robbed you of your excuses of Mariv. You know what the hardest mincha says, the hardest tefillah says the Torah is mincha. Now, in Boca, it's not so bad. Because Boca nowadays, you could daven mincha at 5:20, which is a little bit more convenient for the workday. But if you work in New York City, and mincha time is whatever, 4:15, which is right smack in the middle of the day, which means you got to go out during your lunch break to chapa mincha, Davening Mincha is really hard. It's a big nisayon to be able to stop what you're doing, leave your desk, focus on Hashem for 15 minutes and come back to your desk. That's really, really hard to do. So the Torah says the person who's willing to be moser nefesh for that tefillah, that's what makes it the most auspicious davening. And what does this have to do with Yitzchak? What does it have to do with the word mincha? So if you look on page number 3, he writes, what was the Korban Mincha? Who was the Korban Mincha brought by? The Korban Mincha was brought by an ani. The Korban Mincha was brought, right? It's flour. It was the cheapest of materials. And so therefore it was bought by someone who was poor, who couldn't afford a more expensive Korban. Comes along the Gemara, and Hashem says, lest you think that because it was the lowest of the korbanos, it wasn't a grace animal, it was a paltry, you know, flour and water, maybe Hashem says you'll think it's not important. No, Hashem says, it's even more important in my eyes. Why? Because for this ani, who has almost nothing, and yet he's still willing to bring me a sacrifice, that, Hashem says, is the most beautiful in my eyes. The pasuk says, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Midarko Lahavi Mincha, ani, who brings a korban mincha? It's someone who's poor. It's as if he brought his nefesh. That's why the pasuk says, by a korban mincha, it uses the word nefesh. It uses the word nefesh. Because Hashem says, as if he brought his soul. He was so most, okay, a guy who's big, rich, he brings an animal, what's the big deal? But a guy who has nothing, and yet despite that, he's willing to bring it to Hashem. Hashem says, that's the most valuable to me. So a korban mincha, says Rav Epstein, represents Mesiras Nefesh. It represents the value of even when something is hard and when it's difficult and requires sacrifice, you're going to do it for Hashem anyways. The ani who has nothing to his name and yet he's willing to bring a korban, Hashem says, that's the most important to me, not the rich guy who brought the big animal. But the ani who has nothing and yet despite that is willing to give to me, Hashem says, that's the most precious. That's the most beautiful. That's the most valuable. Now, says Reb Epstein, you understand why the afternoon tefillah is given that same name of mincha. Because a mincha represents something that's hard to do. A mincha represents something that requires mesiras nefesh. It requires sacrifice. And so the same way the ani sacrifices by bringing the korban mincha, we sacrifice when we take time out of our day and allow ourselves to focus, that is our mincha. That is our sacrifice to Hashem. That is our way of saying to Hashem, even though it's hard and difficult and requires mesiras nefesh, I'm going to do it anyways. And therefore he says, on page number 3, in that underline, he says, he says, now we understand the connection to the Torah. Because during mincha, when you have your next meeting on your mind, and you're fully immersed in your work, and yet you're able to pull yourself away for tefillah, it's as if you had that same mesiras nefesh of the ani. You did something hard. You did something that wasn't easy. You did something that requires sacrifice. Hashem says, that is mincha. The korba mincha was the sacrifice of the ani. Tfilas mincha is the sacrifice of all of us that make the effort, even though it's not easy. And even though you might, it's awkward, you know, I'm not allowed to call out individuals. I've gotten in trouble the last few weeks for mentioning family members. But, you know, you hear stories. You work in the city and you got to go out and you got to, you know, chapa mincha, even though you got to arrange your whole schedule around it, your meetings around it. That's real mesiras nefesh. And when you do mesiras nefesh, says Rav Epstein, that is what the korban mincha represents. That's what the word mincha represents. Now, why do I love this? Why do I think it's so important? First of all, I think it's a beautiful idea. It's a beautiful understanding of the word mincha. Mincha represents mesiras nefesh, both in the korban and in the tefillah. But I think much more importantly, it should be chizuk to all of us. Now again, I said in Boca it's easy, because we have now on Sundays we have our mincha gedola mincha. So, although I heard that that's now been renamed as the pre-kickoff mincha, that's what it was referred to on Sunday, okay? All right, we're mekadesh l'chol. Okay, Makadosh L'chol. So you have a mincha gedola pre-kickoff mincha. Then you have your 2 o'clock. We've got our plag mincha marav at 4:10. And then you have your 5:20. It's easy for us here. But if you, what? 5:20, right? 5:15? Okay, whatever. I was on time today. No, 5:15, right? But other places, more north, it's a lot harder. So this should be chizuk for us. That getting to mincha nowadays is difficult. Getting to mincha nowadays is not easy. Certainly if it means pulling yourself away from the rigors and the overwhelming nature of our daily life, and to be able to step into the shul and to allow ourselves to immerse in Kedusha for 10, 15 minutes at that time period, that's our mincha. So everyone should think about that. When you daven mincha, and it's hard, maybe you're in an airport catching a flight. Maybe it is for you, the Mesiras Nefesh, is even though, you know, the Patriots are on tonight, you're going to go to a 9 o'clock mar, whatever, right? Mincha, I mean, on Sunday, right? Whatever your Mesiras Nefesh is, think about that during mincha. Think about the fact that I am being Moser Nefesh. I'm sacrificing for you, Hashem, because this is important that I have this conversation with you right now. That is our mincha. The mincha of the ani, of the poor person, was sacrifice. When we make an effort to get to mincha, that is our sacrifice as well. And Chazal tell us that when you sacrifice for mincha, that is the most auspicious. That's why Elio Anavi was answered at that time as well. So we've seen two ideas. The first was Rav Neria about the three things that Rivka brought back after Sarah passed away: the cloud, the candle, and the dough. We saw idea number two was the significance of mincha, yeah?
You could say that mincha is the bracha and the isa.
Mincha is the bracha and the isa. Okay, we got to think about that a little bit. Okay, shkoyach. Last idea. Last idea comes from Lubavitcher Rebbe. The Lubavitcher Rebbe in Likutei Sichos writes the following. The pasuk tells us, Ve'avram zakein ba bayamim. How do you translate those words? Ve'avram zakein ba bayamim. So Avram zakein, that's easy. Avram gets old. And what does ba bayamim mean?
Advanced in age.
Okay, so he gets old and advanced in age. So I have two questions on this. They're not my questions. They're Lubavitcher Rebbe's questions. Number one, isn't that redundant? Why couldn't you have just said Ve'avram zakein? Or Ve'avram ba bayamim? Why did you have to say both Avram zakein and he was ba bayamim? That seems redundant and repetitive and superfluous, for those who get the joke in that. Okay, that's rabbinic. That's like Boston humor. That was like humor when I went to high school. Okay, for the, all right, whatever. I made an elitist Boston joke. Okay, so isn't it redundant? That's question number one. Question number two is the pasuk already told us that Avram got old. If I was advanced and prepared, I would have had the chumash here, but no, it's fine. You'll trust me that in Perek Yurches, pasuk Yud Aleph, the Torah already tells us that Avram and Sarah were Baba Yamim, that Avram and Sarah were already old. So if we know that they're old, and we know Avram's old, we know his age, so why does it have to tell me again, towards the end of his life, 41 years later, that once again he's old? I knew he was old 41 years ago. Now I know he's even more old, right? I mean, like, how many levels of old can you get? Okay, so those are the two questions. Number one isn't redundant. Couldn't it have just said Avram Zakein, that Avram was old? What does it mean he was old and he came into his days? And number two is, didn't we already know he's old? So what is it teaching us here as well? So the Lubavitcher Rebbe goes through a few suggestions. He quotes a few midrashim. He rejects those midrashim. Ayin Sham, I'm happy to send anyone this sicha by the Rebbe, and they can look at those midrashim inside. But I wanted to share with you the ultimate suggestion of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, because I think it is such a beautiful suggestion. He starts with the premise of, what does Baba Yamim mean? So we translate it as, he came into his days. What does that mean, he came into his days? Like, again, translate it. You know, sometimes you look something up in the dictionary, and you'll say, like, you know, the word is cooking. And the dictionary will say, the art to cook. And you'd be like, that didn't help me. If I didn't know what cooking is, I don't know what to cook means. So here, too, what does Baba Yamim mean? So you translate it as, to come into my days. What does that mean, to come into your days? That doesn't help me at all. So how would you translate it? What does Baba Yamim mean?
I could say, you know, he's elderly, but some people are older and still active. Could be Baba Yamim, say he's old and now he's no longer as active as he was.
How do you see that by Baba
Yamim? Yom Yom, I'm involved in something.
Okay, so you're close. You're at like the 25-yard line. I'll put you into the end zone. Okay, so if you look at page number five. What? Well, it happens to be the Patriots are playing tonight. Okay, Browns fans, okay. So here we go, page number five. He writes that the word Baba Yamim, kipashtush tatevos, exactly as you were alluding to, it has to be understood literally. Shehigia ba, what does ba mean? It means nichnas. Nichnas means like you're fully immersed, you're fully wrapped in it. Baba Yamim means that uba nichnas besocha yamim. Like the way you go into a house and you're immersed in the house, so too when you go into a day, you're immersed in the day. What does that mean, you're immersed in your day? You're wrapped in a day. Zosomeris, this is to mean, Shein Zatir Mispar Shnos Adam. It's not a reference to the quantitative years of a person, whether they're a lot or few. Ela Ofen Chai Adam B'Yamim Elu. It's the quality of those days. Baba Yamin means that you are present in those days, that you're wrapped fully by life. And we know this to be true, that there are people, and I think this is what you're alluding to, there are people that are alive, but they're not present in life. Either they're so obsessed about the past that it doesn't allow them to live in the present, or they're so anxious and nervous about the future that it doesn't allow them to live in the present, or we just live in such a scattered generation where we're always running from one thing to the next that we're never present in the moment. Baba Yamin means that he was immersed in his day, that every single day, Avram was present in that day. He was there. He was living it to its fullest. He wasn't worrying about yesterday. He wasn't anxious about tomorrow. He wasn't thinking about the 15 other things he had to do, but he was ba. He entered into the day. That day fully immersed him. It was the most important thing to him. If that's the case, then he says, Kolomar, Hayamim Shavru Adam Ve'yamoru Shebahem, Einam Kmo Davar Over V'cholev. Okay, I don't want to read that paragraph right now. I'm going to come back to it. Now, the question then becomes, if that's what Baba Yamin means, now we understand, by the way, Avram Zakein is a reflection of his age. Baba Yamin is attitudinally. What is his attitude towards the life that he's living? But why does it have to tell us this 41 years later? In other words, it could have told us, it already did tell us that Avram and Sarah were Baba Yamin. It told us that already a long time ago, at the beginning of Parshas Vayera. So why now, at the end of Avram's life, does it once again have to tell us that he's Baba Yamin? That's the next question of Lubavitch Rebbe. And he gives here such a magnificent understanding. What happened in those 41 years? Since the last time, in the beginning of Parshas Vayera, the Torah tells us that Avram and Sarah were Baba Yamin. A lot of difficulty, and a lot of hardship, and a lot of stress has happened to Avram Avinu. The Akedah happened, his wife passed away happened. There were some really stressful, difficult hardships that happened to Avram. Now, what could Avram have done? What could his response have been? Well, his response could have been to throw up his hands with indifference and apathy and to say, what's the point? Right? That could have been one approach. Sarah's not here. Yitzchak, whatever. So what's the point of this all? Hashem put me through the ringer. What's the point? Apathy and indifference. That could have been one approach. Another approach is he could have almost detached himself from this world to protect himself, lest he become hurt by the world once again. The easiest thing to do is just to avoid and to detach yourself from the world. And many people do that. Avram, though, does the opposite, said Lubavitch Rebbe. Instead of becoming apathetic, and instead of becoming indifferent, or instead of distancing him and detaching himself from the world as a protective measure so that he doesn't get hurt by the world once again, Avram, despite all of that, continues to choose to live life Baba Yamim to its fullest. He was fully immersed in his days. He says here, on page number 6 now, he says, at the top of the page, he says, Va'adaraba. Yesh lomar shedafka bayamim elu, specifically during these years, hayuma oros chashuvim machriim b'chay Avram. There are seminal moments that happened in his life, even more important than happened pre-Yitzchak. And they were hard, says Lubavitch Rebbe. But al pi peir zeh baba yamim, sheyimei ha'adam heim ba'ofen shenichnas behem u'poalim aleim roshem. Despite all of that, Avram shekol yemei chayav hayu shleimim ba'avodas Hashem shel hichsir malei bod es Hashem afilo yom echad miyimei chayav. He doesn't miss out on even one day. He doesn't detach. He doesn't become indifferent. He doesn't become apathetic, but rather he stays engaged. That, says Lubavitch Rebbe, is the greatness of Avram Avinu here. Avram Avinu is Baba Yamim. Despite every reason not to, he continues to be fully wrapped by life. He continues to live life to its fullest. And therefore, now we understand, we ask two questions. Isn't it redundant? Zakein and Baba Yamim. And didn't the Torah already tell us this? Says Lubavitch Rebbe, they're not redundant. One is a reference to the number of years. One is a reference to his attitude towards his years. But number two, it specifically, why does it have to do this again? Again, it already told us in the beginning of Parshas Vayera that Avram and Sarah were Baba Yamim. No, now we're 41 years later. And a lot has happened in Avram's life. A lot of difficulty and struggle. In hardship. And despite all of that, He continues to be Baba Yamim. He continues to be immersed in life. Nichnas b'chayav. He's present in his life. He's not stuck in the past. He's not anxious about the future. He's not scattered in 50 directions, but every day you get the sense that Avram Avinu woke up. He said, Moda'ani lefanecha melechai v'kayam, shechazarti b'nishmasi, rabamu nasecha, Hashem, you woke me up today. There's got to be a purpose. There's got to be a mission, and therefore I am going to fulfill it today. So we saw three ideas in 30 minutes. I think three very beautiful ideas. One is from Rav Neria, the three things in the tent, the candle, the cloud, and the dough. Idea number two came from Rav Epstein. What does it mean, mincha? A mincha is a code name for sacrifice. The korba mincha was the sacrifice of the ani. Our tefillah mincha is a sacrifice for us because it's hard to do. But with great difficulty comes great reward. That's why the Torah writes that tefillas mincha is the most auspicious of the tefillos. Idea number three came from Lubavitcher Rebbe. About what does it mean, Avram Zakein Ba Bayamim? It's not in terms of number of years, but it's his attitude towards life, something I think all of us can learn a great deal from. I wish everyone a good Shabbat.